to satisfy their carnal pleasures. They spent the wealth of Muslims wastefully upon singers and dalliers. The red nights of the Abbasid caliphs in Baghdad and Samarra were full of all things that Allah prohibited, and these Abbasid caliphs absolutely turned their backs to the Islamic principles and indulged in haram pleasures and lusts. And it was against all this that, as a beacon of light, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam stood up against the darkness promoted by the Abbasid caliphs.
Parts of Ziyara text of Jama'atul Kabira issued by Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabih at-tuja wa a'lam at-tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's Prophet, and the progeny of Allah's Messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat al-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You are listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Now, sometimes we have this opinion or this understanding that the divinely appointed imams only spoke about akhlaqi, moral, ethical, lifestyle things, when in reality, we find that the divinely appointed imams spoke about a whole vast variety of different things. And matter of fact, they were the masters of all of these various sciences, both physical and metaphysical. They were the masters of the Quran and the traditions. They were the masters of various different sciences, just as the jurisprudential sciences and things of that nature. Now, one of the things that they highly emphasized, and we find this in the era of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, is the idea of khums. Now, khums is this one-fifth a tax which is levied upon people, and its purpose is to be able to fight poverty and spread Islamic culture, develop the academia and the intellect of people, and of course revive the Islamic sciences. This khums, this one-fifth, it is in the Quran and it is in the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and it is an obligatory Islamic tax which comes about upon profit that one makes, and it is something that is extra, and it is more than one and their family's expenditure of a year. So at the end of the year, the money that is saved, it is left over, it has not been used. In reality, it can be said that it is extra in this sense. One-fifth or 20% of that goes in the name of khums. Now, there's many conversations that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam has with various different companions, such as Ibrahim bin Muhammad al-Hamdani, who has a conversation with Imam Hadi alayhi salam about this, as well as Ali bin Muhammad bin Shuja' al-Naysaburi, of who has also a conversation with Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Instead of talking about each one of these conversations, just the gist, Imam al-Hadi, after these companions asked him about the one-fifth and what are the various intricacies of the khums and how it is taken out, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam in one instance says that the one-fifth is supposed to be taken out after deducting one's family's expenditures of a year. And in another place, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam replies that for me, the Imam of the time is the one-fifth, which remains after deducting one's expenditure of a year, meaning that which is saved. So based upon this, we find that the modern day jurisprudence have depended on these very conversations of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam in providing evidence for their verdicts and their fatwas, of course, including the fatwa that khums is obligatory on whatever remains, whatever is safe and kept over after the expenditure of 1 year. So these very important conversations that have helped to keep Islam intact for the generations up to the present day, inshallah, until the reappearance of the 12th Imam. May Allah hasten his reappearance. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Aruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The 19th meeting of the International Muslim Forum of Russia and the Islamic World took place in the presence of religious scholars, ambassadors, and political figures from 18 countries in the Moscow Cathedral Mosque on Tuesday. The meeting was overshadowed by the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, and this was the main theme of speeches by Sunni and Shia scholars and participants in this summit. At the beginning of the meeting, Mufti Ravil Gaynuddin, the Grand Mufti of Russia, voiced his support for the resistance of the people of Gaza against the Zionist regime and called for Muslims to join hands to help stop the genocide in Gaza.
We call on the parties to the conflict to refrain from escalating it, ensure security, stop the death of civilians, and move towards a full dialogue based on the peace initiatives of regional and world powers, including Russia.
Hujjatul Islam Hamid Shahriari, the Secretary General of the Iran-based World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought, noted that according to the Quran, justice is the highest and the most important social value that God has emphasized. The Iranian cleric pointed out that now is the time to appeal to the peace-loving and free peoples of the world to help support the Palestinians. He stressed that the Palestine conflict is the top priority of the Islamic world.
The role of the clergy is very important nowadays because we can see the cruelty all over the world. And normally people understand who is who. And this is the first time that we can see how many people in the streets against the cruelty, against the killing of women and children in Gaza Strip, to follow the order of Quran, the order of Allah, to keep from cruelty. Of the world to see that the justice is very important nowadays for the world.
Ambassadors of Iran and Palestine denounced the barbaric crimes committed by the Zionists during the past 75 years as a disgrace to humanity.
International organizations have failed to fulfill their role, including the UN Security Council. The role and influence of religious scholars are now significant. Gaza is not just a Muslim issue. It is an issue of humanity, and it's not related to religion. Both Muslims and Christians, everyone should bear responsibility for this, not to mention the Jews. There is no justification for killing vulnerable people, and everyone must do their best to put out the flames of war.
We refuse to leave our land. We know what does it mean, the immigration. We suffered long, more than 75 years. Therefore, every Palestinian in Gaza Strip, they continue to be in their land in spite of all Israeli attack.
Participants also spoke about the need to create an interreligious charter of traditional spiritual values, as well as the role that spiritual leaders can play in resolving the armed conflict in Palestine.
The forum provides a platform for religious leaders to speak out for humanism and the moral foundation of human existence. That comes at a time when those issues are in the spotlight amid the Israeli genocide in Gaza, where people expect the world to help them in the face of the regime's brutalities. Marina Kartunova, the Moscow Grand Mosque.
Another ship bound for Israel was targeted by Yemen's naval forces in the Red Sea, near Bab el-Mandeb. The Norwegian-owned vessel was reportedly carrying fuel to the Israeli regime. According to military officials, the attack came after the vessel ignored several warnings from Yemen.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a qualitative military operation against the Norwegian ship Stranda, which was loaded with oil and headed to the Israeli entity. The vessel was targeted with a suitable naval missile. Over the past 2 days, the Yemeni armed forces succeeded in preventing the passage of several ships who responded to the warnings of the Yemeni naval forces. We did not resort to targeting the Norwegian ship until its crew rejected all warnings.
The latest attack comes as the Israeli aggression continues to kill innocent Gazans. According to the latest figures, more than 18,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli bombings. Yemen's armed forces said they will continue to target Israeli ships until the genocide in Gaza ends.
The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that they continue to prevent ships of all nationalities heading to Israeli ports from navigating in the Arabian and Red Seas until they bring in the food and medicine that our steadfast brothers in the Gaza Strip need.
In response to Yemen's measures near Bab al-Mandeb, U.S. National Security Advisors have called for the formation of a new naval task force to safeguard the Israeli and commercial shipments in the Red Sea. Yemen's armed and naval forces have sent a strong message to Israel as they continue to impose bans on all cargo shipments to Israel. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Portray yourself as the one fighting for the people and at the same time fight the same people, your own people. That are how many Iranians describe the Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, or the MKO. A court session was held in Tehran on Tuesday to address a lawsuit filed against the MKO over its terrorist activities in Iran over the past 40 years. The lawsuit is aimed at highlighting the organization's crimes against the Iranian people and also the Western countries' complicity in these atrocities. Among the participants in the court are families of victims of MKO acts of terror in the 1980s. They blame the Western support for the MKO and want the organization to be brought to justice on an international level.
These terrorists have had an obvious connection with the U.S. in recent years. They have acted in line with the U.S. policies. The U.S., which claims to uphold human rights, has supported these terrorists. We expect the international bodies and tribunals to hold the organization and its supporters to account. Today, in our country, we see that the legal process is going forward, and we hope to see this process on an international level.
The Western countries have talked about human rights for many years, but we see that the human rights they are talking about have time and again been violated by them. The MEK atrocities against Iranians were supported by them.
A woman says MKO terrorists murdered his husband right in front of her and their children in their own house.
My husband was at home that night. Two of the terrorists ran into our house. They beat me and my husband. After that, they started shooting at him right in front of me and my children.
The terrorist organization of MKO has not been convicted by any international judicial body. In the meantime, it has been supported by the Western countries, including the U.S., which makes them complicit in the organization's crimes. Farzana Shuryan, Tehran.
In Latin America, the Palestinian cause is seen as more than just politics. It is seen as a deeply important humanitarian issue. Across the region, people have showed up in great numbers in rallies held in solidarity with Palestinians being subjected to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Some of the Latin American administrations have also moved ahead of verbal condemnations and took more decisive actions. For instance, Chile's government recalled its ambassador. Bolivia, Argentina, and Mexico severed ties with the regime, and the Honduran government urgently summoned its ambassador for consultations. The resounding support for Palestine from Latin American nations that have had lots of great anti-oppression figures with resistance values like Simon Bolivar, Jose Marti, Fidel Castro, and Che Guevara is not surprising. In this regard, I talked to three Latin American ambassadors to Iran during their visit to the Latin America Cartoon and Caricature exhibition at the Tehran Museum of Contemporary Arts. Venezuela's ambassador to Iran censured the U.S. unwavering support for Israel, blaming Washington's backing for Tel Aviv as the main culprit for prolongation of Israeli onslaught.
La posición primero.
The U.S. is playing an undeniable role in the developments of Gaza. It has supported the regime's aggression against Palestinians and added fuel to the fire. Days ago, it was the U.S. that vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. is supporting the Israeli genocide of Palestinians and is contributing to the continuation of this massacre.
The Bolivian ambassador also pointed to the U.S. move to veto a U.N. Security Council resolution that would have called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Unfortunately, we're observing that some international organizations are useless. For instance, a single vote can overturn the decision of the whole world in the UN Security Council. This failed system has led to the prolongation of the Israeli aggression.
Perez Ramos also called on the international community to put an end to the Israeli massacre of civilians.
The Bolivian government, as well as many other nations across the globe, has time and again condemned the Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. The international community must take more decisive actions to stop the regime's onslaught of Palestinians.
While having an estimated 60,000 Palestinian refugees, including their descendants, in his country, the Brazilian ambassador to Iran refused to directly condemn the U.S.-backed Israeli genocide of Palestinians. He only said it's a pity that the U.S. has blocked efforts to uphold a ceasefire in Gaza.
And we hope the United States will review its position, and we hope Israel also review its position after they see the catastrophe they are doing in Palestine. So I think even hardline countries will have to be sensitive to the tragedy, what is going on in Palestine.
While the Israeli narrative continues falling apart, the truth has been uncovered for Latin Americans, like other people across the globe. That is, Palestinians are the ones subjected to decades of oppression, occupation, and ethnic cleansing.
Israel has for years sought to foster a close relationship with Latin American countries. However, the regime's ongoing onslaught on Palestinians has led to a seismic shift, that is, an exponential surge in anti-Israeli sentiment among Latin American nations. Mahdia Bosion, Tehran.
Marking Human Rights Day by shedding light on the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza and how the international community has failed to uphold what it considers to be a great humanity's achievement. The Foundation of Dialogue and Solidarity of Unified Nations, FODASAN, held its annual international conference on the future of peace and human rights in West Asia, as could be expected, focusing on the numerous instances of violations of international law and the Geneva Convention in particular, as Israeli attacks continue in Gaza.
Quite naturally, a conference that puts the spotlight on the issue of human rights cannot be indifferent to the developments in Gaza. As we tend to discuss human rights in West Asia, we obviously have to examine how the Universal Declaration of Human Rights affects the lives of human beings in practical measures. What are the consequences when it's not observed? So in a way, today, we try to be the voice of the oppressed people in Gaza.
As one of the three pillars of the United Nations, it seems that the human rights is the one mostly neglected compared to peace and security and development.
The fact that there are many unresolved issues that can lead to wars in the West Asia region make it inevitable for us to discuss the issue of human rights violations during wars in this region.
As explained by the participants, the Geneva Convention is therefore considered the most challenging to implement, as the inability of the UN to stop Israeli atrocities and standing up for the people of Gaza has now come to light.
Just because actors violate international law, it doesn't kind of undermine the validity of international law. It just means that we need to work on better enforcement and better accountability mechanisms that we do always better in terms of implementation. Unfortunately, it seems that the 75 years that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights now is in existence, I think we have made progress in some parts, but we have also incurred many setbacks. And all I can hope is that we draw our lessons out of this horrible situation and that wisdom will prevail and a sustainable solution for peace will prevail.
Established in 2017, the Foundation of Dialogue and Solidarity of Unified Nations attempts to take positive steps in applying the concepts of human rights, particularly in a region where it is mostly overlooked. FODASAN hopes that by shedding light on the shortcomings that exist, it can bring a change for the better.
The participants of the 5th International Conference on the Future of Peace and Human Rights in West Asia believe that so far the international community has not demonstrated the willpower to properly implement the Geneva Convention, and what's happening in Gaza is a clear example of that. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The streets of the occupied West Bank are empty. Transportation is disrupted while institutions, banks, schools, ministries, businesses, and shops are closed as part of a global strike that was declared in protest of Israel's ongoing genocide on the Gaza Strip. Palestinian activists and grassroots organizations have called for the global strike to demand an immediate ceasefire as Israel continues its aggression on Gaza. The call for the strike here has been decided by the National and Islamic Forces, who also called for the Palestinians from all walks of life to rally on this day for the sake of their own people being slaughtered by Israel in Gaza.
The whole world is on strike today. This strike is unprecedented in history. This stresses that all the globe is with the Palestinians. This comprehensive strike that has paralyzed all aspects of life in the occupied territories means the failure of the official level and the Security Council and the international arena to put an end to the Israeli occupation and its aggression.
We believe that it is important to show that there is a solidarity with the Palestinian people and that the world, young people mainly, and the citizens of the world, if you like, if we can say so, are against this war or against this aggression against the Palestinian people and against this genocide.
The protests come only a few days after the United States vetoed the UN Security Council resolution that called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Protesters here say the strike is also a message to the U.S. administration that stands against the aspirations of the Palestinians. They believe the U.S. is not only preventing an end to this war, but also backing the occupying regime to go on with its genocidal war.
It's also a message to the American administration that has used the veto while 13 countries rejected this aggression. This veto by the American administration gives a green light to Israel to go on and escalate its massacre of our people in Gaza Strip.
For 66 days, the Israeli military continued its onslaught on the blockaded Gaza, killing some 18,000 Palestinians and wounding nearly 50,000, the majority of whom women and children. Ending the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip and declaring a permanent ceasefire are today's urgent calls, not only of the Palestinians here in the occupied territories, but also of the free people all over the globe. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Activists in Seoul, South Korea, continued their campaign to protest Israel's atrocities against Palestinians. As Israel's attacks on Gaza enters its third month, Tel Aviv's indiscriminate killing and illegal tactics are communicated to a growing audience.
Israeli media reported that Israeli forces have created a so-called massacre factory where they're intentionally targeting civilians using AI. And the U.S. is approving this. It's becoming clear that both the U.S. and Israel are war criminals in this genocide.
The killing of prominent Palestinians such as poet Rafat Al-Arir put more names and faces to Israel's crimes. Young people around the world are understanding that the diplomatic protection Israel receives from the United States in its UN Security Council veto costs lives.
When the UN vote concluded, I couldn't believe that they were really concerned about the loss of life. The United Nations should have called for a ceasefire. I am really disappointed that the UN seems like it wants world peace, but then says that such massacres are okay.
South Korea abstained from the most recent UN vote calling for a ceasefire. Still, as some Americans' criticism of Israel is muzzled, protesters in South Korea can say what they mean. As Israel continues its onslaught against the Palestinian people, the subject seems to have declined in prominence in the mainstream media around the globe. These demonstrators here, circling the Israeli embassy week in and week out, seek to remind people that the Israeli army is killing an innocent woman or child every few minutes. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Alavi Tehrani. Please stay tuned.
فرمایش حضرت باقر به ابا خالد کابلی اینه امام ما میفرما
In a beautiful hadith, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam told Abu Khalid al-Kabuli, I swear by Allah that a Muslim will not recognize our guardianship unless his or her heart is empty from any kind of sin. Muslims must observe five important etiquettes regarding the status of imamate of the Ahlul Bayt if they want to reach their guardianship. These five etiquettes are love for Ahlul Bayt, obedience towards Ahlul Bayt, true recognition of the status of the Ahlul Bayt, and finally, believing in their guardianship.
ما دنبال همین محبت هست و فکر میکنیم این محبت یعنی همون گرایش درونی.
Love for Ahlul Bayt does not only mean to be inclined towards Ahlul Bayt. True love for Ahlul Bayt means to empty our heart from any type of sin and to be submissive toward the orders of Allah and the Ahlul Bayt. Being submissive means to obey Ahlul Bayt and to behave and act like them in our life. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Alavi Tehrani. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
ولا تتفرقوا فيه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
Top Biden administration officials are scrambling to keep border talks alive as a deal with Senate Republicans over Ukraine funding has grown increasingly elusive. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story. Biden administration on Tuesday, 12th of December, indicated to congressional lawmakers that it would be willing to support a new border authority to expel migrants without asylum screenings, as well as a dramatic expansion of immigration detention and deportations to convince Republicans to back aid to Ukraine. Four people familiar with the matter told CBS News. The White House informed Senate Democrats that it could back those sweeping and hardline immigration policy changes as part of the negotiations over President Biden's emergency funding request, a roughly $100 billion package that includes military aid to Israel, Taiwan, and Ukraine, as well as money to bolster border enforcement and hire additional immigration officials. For weeks, a small group of senators have been attempting to reach an immigration enforcement deal. Republicans have conditioned any further assistance to Ukraine to policy changes designed to reduce the unprecedented levels of illegal crossings along U.S.'s southern border with Mexico. During a press conference at the White House on Tuesday, 12th of December, President Biden said his team is working with Senate Democrats and Republicans to try to find a bipartisan compromise, both in terms of changes in policy and to provide the resources we need to secure the border. He said he has offered compromise already, adding that holding Ukraine funding hostage in an attempt to force through an extreme Republican partisan agenda on the border is not how it works. We need real solutions, he said. In recent days, the Biden administration has intensified its engagement with lawmakers. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas started engaging with negotiators in the Senate this week. Three people with knowledge of his engagement have confirmed to CBS News. Alejandro Mayorkas was on Capitol Hill on Tuesday afternoon as lawmakers continued talks aimed at reaching a deal before Congress adjourns for the holidays. A senior Department of Homeland Security official said Mayorkas and other Department of Homeland Security officials are providing technical assistance to lawmakers and their staff, not negotiating policy proposals. Specifically, the White House indicated that it would support a new, far-reaching legal authority to allow U.S. border officials to summarily expel migrants without processing their asylum claims. The measure would effectively revive the Trump-era Title 42 pandemic order and allow officials to pause U.S. asylum law without a public health justification. The administration would also back a nationwide expansion of a process known as expedited removal that allows immigration officials to deport migrants without court hearings if they don't ask for asylum or if they fail their initial asylum interviews. The program is currently limited to the border region. Moreover, the Biden White House would be willing to mandate the detention of certain migrants who are allowed into the country pending the adjudication of their claims. It's unclear how this provision would work, since the U.S. government has never had the detention space to detain all migrants who cross into the country illegally. Biden administration officials and some Senate Democrats have also previously indicated a willingness to raise the initial screening standard for so-called credible fear interviews that migrants have to pass to avoid being deported under expedited removal. In a statement, White House spokesperson Angelo Fernandez said the administration did not have determined policy positions in the congressional negotiations. The White House has not signed off on any particular policy proposal or final agreements, and reporting that ascribes determined policy positions to the White House is inaccurate. The president has said he is open to compromise, and we look forward to continued conversations with Senate negotiators as we work towards a bipartisan package. The Biden administration's willingness to entertain broad restrictive changes to U.S. asylum and immigration laws, including measures resembling Trump-era policies, may increase the likelihood of Republicans supporting its foreign aid package. But even if a bipartisan deal is forged in the Senate, it is unclear if the resulting legislation would win approval in the House of Representatives. The website Politico.com has also covered the same story and tells us more. Top Biden administration officials are scrambling to keep border talks alive as a deal with Senate Republicans over Ukraine funding has grown increasingly elusive. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Natalie Quillian, and Schwanza Goff, Director of the White House Office of Legislative Affairs, on Tuesday afternoon, 12th of December, met on Capitol Hill with Senate negotiators. Senators Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, Kyrsten Sinema, Independent of Arizona, James Lankford, Republican of Oklahoma. They also met with staff from offices of Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients, while not present as a negotiator on Tuesday on Capitol Hill, has also been heavily involved in Capitol Hill engagements in recent days. Speaking with Democratic Senate negotiators Chuck Schumer and James Lankford several times, according to senior administration officials. The White House is hustling, said one of the four people who knew about the negotiations, all of whom were granted anonymity to discuss private conversations. They're pretty desperate at this point. Among the ideas under consideration, according to two of the people, is a version of Title 42 like expulsion authorities and a nationwide expansion of the process known as expedited removal, which allows the government to deport anyone unable to establish a legal basis. In addition, conversations have centered on including a mandatory detention policy until migrants can be placed into expedited removal proceedings, as well as changes to the credible fear standard, which would ultimately deny more migrants the opportunity to apply for asylum. People both on Capitol Hill and the administration cautioned that the talks were fluid. They also warned that no specific policies have been agreed to, and simply because an idea was under consideration didn't mean it would be included, let alone presented, as a Democratic-authored proposal. The White House has not signed off on any particular policy proposals or final agreements, and reporting that ascribes determined policy positions to the White House is inaccurate, according to a White House spokesperson. The spokesperson added, President Biden has said he's open to compromise and we look forward to continued conversations with Senate negotiators as we work towards a bipartisan package. But the people involved in the negotiations also noted that the Biden White House is eager to see a deal cut. And if the policies under consideration do move forward, it will be viewed as major reversals by the Biden administration. Few think a deal this week is possible, though negotiators hope to keep the talks alive into the new year. But the last-ditch effort speaks to the level of urgency facing the Biden White House as President Biden pushes Congress to deliver more aid for Ukraine in a package now tied to border policy. On Tuesday, Senator James Lankford said the White House ramped up talks with him on Monday night after he suggested earlier in the day that there's no time to finish a deal. Not the first that I've talked to them, but the first time that we've talked about anything serious policy, he said. The potential counteroffer comes as President Biden hosted Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House on Tuesday, 12th of December.
Seven, there much pressure.
We come to you, and oh God, name that thou art our only King.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. Again, we would like to send our condolences to the Imam of the time, Imam Sahib al-Asri wal-Zaman, to all the Shia, all the followers and lovers and admirers of Hazrat Fatima to Zahra Salamullah alayha, as we are currently in the days of her sad demise. And one of the things that we would like to ask the Imam alayhim as-salam, that when he reappears, that hopefully he allows us to see and go to the actual burial site of Hazrat Zahra Salamullah alayha, to send our condolences, to do a Fatiha, and to just sit there and contemplate our very existence at the grave of Fatima to Zahra Salamullah alayha. So with that in mind, and being in the days of Fatimiyah, the book that we would like to introduce to our dear brothers and sisters, our dear listeners, is a book that is dedicated to her. As we know that this particular individual, being and having the status that she has, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has also not failed to mention her. That there are certain and specific verses within the glorious Quran that speaks about
this particular lady, this grand lady. So the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners is around this particular subject of some of the verses and some of the Quranic mentions of Hazrat Zahra Salamullah Alayha. So inshallah, please stay tuned for our next segment.
Why do we read books in the first place? What are books good for?
We read books because we don't want to reinvent the wheel, if you will.
We'd better take advantage of human cultural and intellectual heritage, particularly related to our daily activities, such as our physical, mental, spiritual, or even religious health.
We can't ignore the past thoughts and experiences. To do so, we need to boost our bookshelf.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. The book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners is titled The Fountain of Paradise, Fatima al-Zahra, or Fatima Zahra, as the title says, in the Noble Quran. This book was under the auspices of Ayatollah al-Uzma Nasir Makarim Shirazi and translated by Brother Salim Bimji. So basically, this book, or introduction to this book is this. What follows in this brief booklet is a commentary of three specific chapters from the Noble Quran, which speak about the spiritual greatness and significance of the only daughter of Prophet Muhammad, Fatima Zahra. Translated from the original Farsi work, which was compiled by a group of Muslim scholars under the guidance of Ayatollah al-Uzma Sheikh Nasir Makarim Shirazi, and other sources to complete the discussion in certain areas, as have been indicated, this publication adds merely a drop into the endless ocean of the preeminence of the Ahlul Bayt in the Noble Quran, and specifically the direct and indirect mention of the leader of the woman of all the worlds. The leader of the woman of all the worlds, Fatima Zahra, as spoken by Allah the Almighty. Every year, millions of Muslims cry for Fatima Zahra around the world. There are a multitude of gatherings, both commemorations and mourning ceremonies in her memory. So basically, this is the book that we have in front of us that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners. So this particular book has five particular parts to it. The first part is the introduction by the translator, of which we just read a small bit from. The second part is the tafsir, or the exegesis, of Surah Al-Insan or Al-Dahr, the chapter of mankind or time, that deals with some verses that indicate the greatness of Fatima al-Zahra salam alayha, especially the time when she gave her food to an orphan, a poor man, and a war captive. The second particular chapter or surah that is discussed is Surah Al-Qadr, the night of ordainment or power. And the third one is Surah Al-Kawthar, or the abundance or abundant good. The book then ends with the ziyara, or the pilgrimage recitation, or the visitation recitation for the mistress of the woman of the world, Lady Fatima Zahra. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon her. And then at the end, other translation available from Brother Salim Bimji is what the book ends with. So inshallah, for the benefit of our dear listeners, we will recite a small portion of this book, and we will do so in our next segment. So please stay tuned. Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim. The book that we have introduced to our dear listeners is titled The Fountain of Paradise, Fatima Zahra in the Noble Quran. The book was authored under the auspices, under the guidance of Ayatollah al-Uzma Nasir Makarim al-Shirazi, and translated by Brother Salim Bimji. As we mentioned, the book is a collection of commentary of three specific
chapters of the Noble Quran, of the Glorious Quran, that deal with Fatima to Zahra, Salamullah alayha. So we'll be reading from the last chapter that deals with Surah Al-Kawthar. Surah Al-Kawthar, Abundant Good. This chapter was revealed in Mecca and contains three verses, contents of Surah Al-Kawthar. In the name of Allah, the All-Beneficent, the All-Merciful. It is commonly held that this chapter was revealed in Mecca. However, there are some scholars who believe that it may have been revealed in Medina. Another option states that this chapter was revealed twice, once in Mecca and once in Medina. However, the narration cited on the occasion of his revelation attests to the first idea, which says that it is a Meccan chapter. In regards to the occasion of revelation, the following story has been narrated. As ibn Wa'il, who was one of the chiefs of the pagans, met the noble prophet as he was coming out of the sacred masjid, the Masjid al-Haram. As ibn Wa'il proceeded to speak with the prophet during that short time, a group of leaders of the Quraysh were sitting in the masjid watching him from a distance. When As ibn Wa'il entered the masjid, they asked him, "Who were you speaking to?" He answered with the Abtar one. As ibn Wa'il used this derogatory word Abtar for the noble prophet to taunt him, because he knew that the noble prophet had a son named Abdullah who had died in his infancy. And in the language of the Arabs, a person who had no male offspring was referred to as Abtar, meaning one who has no posterity to follow after him. Thus the Quraysh gave the noble prophet this nickname after the death of his son. To condole the noble prophet, this chapter was revealed with the glad tidings of the greatest amount of grace, Al-Kawthar, an abundance of goodness from Allah, and that the prophet's opponents would be abtar or have no posterity. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we truly try and understand the greatness of Hazrat Zahra salamullah alayha, and that we are of those who, if not physically and not by bloodline, of those who are of the posterity of the noble prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam by our deeds and actions, inshaAllah. Inshallah, until next time, my dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Bookshelf with Brother Yasser Ibrahim on RIB English Radio.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.